This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israeli strikes claim more Palestinian lives in southern Gaza as a total death toll from the regime's genocidal war rises to nearly 28,200. Various countries sound the alarm about Israel's looming operation in southern Gaza city of Rafah, saying it would lead to a catastrophic humanitarian crisis. Iraq says it has resumed talks with the United States to set up a timeline for the pullout of US-led coalition forces from the country. Hello everyone from the studios in Tehran, thank you for joining us. Now, more Palestinians have fallen victim to Israeli attacks on Gaza, with cities in the south now being the focal point of the strikes. In Khan Yunis, a number of Palestinians were killed in fresh air raids. The city's Nasser Hospital was also targeted again, that left several people dead or injured. The regime's forces also blocked the entry of oxygen cylinders into Amal Hospital, causing the death of three patients. In the city of Rafah, Israeli warplanes struck civilian homes and mosques, killing at least 77 people and injuring more than 230 more, while dozens are also trapped under the rubble. Around 28,200 Palestinians have been killed in more than 4 months of Israeli genocide in Gaza. Most of them, those killed, are women and children. The humanitarian situation in Gaza continues to worsen as the Israeli regime continues bombing and shelling the besieged strip from the ground, sea and air. Earlier we spoke to Moti Abu Musabe in Deir al-Balah. Let's listen to what he had to tell us.
Here in the central area of Gaza Strip, the Israeli occupation forces on the ground targeted a school which is taken shelter by the Palestinian evacuees in Nusayrat refugee camp in Gaza City as well. The Israeli occupation forces withdrew from similar parts, particularly in Tal el-Hawa and As-Sana'a squares, and horrific massacres unfolded after that withdrawal. Okay. As 100 Palestinian dead bodies were extracted from the rubble left behind after the Israeli occupation forces. Only 10% of the humanitarian relief enters and reaches the city, which means catastrophic conditions for the Palestinian people. In the same context, the Israeli occupation forces intensified their attacks. Now, as we speak, the Israeli artillery maintains its shelling to the eastern parts of the city, while the Israeli military boats open their gunfire to the coastal areas of the city, while the Israeli airstrikes were continued against the city. Over the last 12 hours, the Israeli warplanes intensified their attacks, hitting and destroying several residential buildings, leaving at least 30 Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children, dead under the rubble of those destroyed houses, while the Israeli strikes are still continued till this moment.
A chorus of warnings is coming in over Israel's looming ground invasion of Rafah. A number of countries have sounded the alarm, saying the invasion could create a catastrophic humanitarian situation there. The British Foreign Secretary has expressed his deep concern about the possible invasion, while the French government called for measures to avoid a humanitarian disaster. Paris also said it's opposed to any forced displacement of Gaza's population. In a separate statement, the Netherlands said a large-scale military offensive against Rafah can result in many civilian casualties. Ireland also voiced its concern, stressing that the invasion would amount to a grave violation of international humanitarian law. Rafah is hosting some 1.3 million Palestinians taking shelter from attacks in the rest of Gaza. But Israel has intensified its airstrikes there in recent days. The international charity Action Aid warns of disastrous consequences if Israel increases its air raids on the city. The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees says Israel has blocked a major food shipment bound for Gaza. UNRWA says the shipment could provide a month of food supply for more than 1 million people in the besieged territory. UNRWA says the shipment, provided by Turkey, is stuck at a port in occupied Palestine due to restrictions by the Israeli regime. The agency says Israel has rejected half of its aid requests for northern Gaza this year. The UNRWA chief says the regime has become quite hostile to the agency in a way that it has impacted its ability to properly operate. Israeli forces killed two more Palestinians in the West Bank as the regime has intensified its daily dose of violence across the occupied territories. One of the killings took place in Al-Quds. According to the regime's troops, the victim was armed with a knife and was trying to stab them after being stopped for questioning. The Israeli military has cited a similar justification for another shooting that happened in the city of Al-Khalil. It says the slain Palestinian man was attempting to stab an Israeli soldier. The killings are the latest episode of the Israeli violence, which has increased in the West Bank since October the 7th. In more than 4 months, hundreds of Palestinians have been killed and thousands abducted in the occupied territories. Iraq says it has resumed talks with the United States on the withdrawal of US-led coalition troops from the country. An Iraqi military spokesman said the talks would be aimed at setting up a timeline for a phased pullout of coalition forces. General Yahya Rasul expressed hope that the talks could lead to an outcome soon. Senior Iraqi officials have said the end of the US-led coalition was a necessity for the security and stability of Iraq. Anti-US sentiment is running high in Iraq in the face of US support for the Israeli genocide in Gaza and the recent deadly US strikes on Iraq. Those attacks killed dozens of civilians and Iraqi security forces. The US maintains some 2,500 troops in Iraq under the pretext of fighting the Daesh terrorist group, which has already been defeated in the country. Iran's foreign minister has visited Damascus as part of a regional tour. Hossein Amir Abdullahian met with President Bashar al-Assad and other senior Syrian officials to discuss the latest developments in the region, including Palestine. Our correspondent Ibrahim Wadi reports from Damascus.
After a visit to Lebanon, Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian arrived in Damascus, where he met President Bashar al-Assad and discussed bilateral relations. President Assad warned that the U.S. supply of weapons to Israel threatens to expand the war in Gaza. Amir Abdullahian said the aggression against Gaza is considered the main issue at the regional and international levels, noting that Syria is in the front line of supporting the Palestinian people and their cause. Amir Abdullahian also met with his counterpart, Faisal Miqdad. They condemned the U.S. aggression on Syria, Iraq and Yemen, and the repeated Israeli attacks on Syria. They later held a press conference.
I discussed with President al-Assad the latest regional and international developments. The leaders of our two countries are willing to achieve remarkable progress through cooperation in various fields. President Ibrahim Raisi has extended an official invitation to President Assad to visit Iran. We condemn the illegal presence of U.S. forces in Syrian territory.
Our two countries share identical views concerning the support that should be given to the people in the Gaza Strip in light of the genocide perpetrated by the Israeli occupation. Syria has fought wars against the Israeli occupation and remains prepared to engage when necessary. But we decide the timing and approach. The repeated assaults by the Zionist entity on Syrian territories are a direct result of Syrian resistance against this entity.
The Iranian minister concluded by stating that the onslaught on Gaza must come to an end. This visit comes at a critical time to reaffirm the unity of the axis of resistance leadership in response to the escalating aggression by the U.S. and Israel, and to demonstrate the absolute support for the Palestinian people in Gaza. Ibrahim Wahdi, Damascus.
The Iranian foreign minister says Israeli forces are suffering heavy casualties in Gaza, which has turned into a quagmire for the regime's prime minister.
Today, Netanyahu is stuck in the Gaza quagmire. Gaza has turned into a graveyard for Zionists.
Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the comments in a press conference in Damascus with his Syrian counterpart. He is in Syria as part of a regional tour which has also taken him to Lebanon. The top Iranian diplomat said there's no solution to the crisis in Gaza but diplomacy and the cessation of US-Israeli genocide there. He added that Iranian military advisers will continue to stand by Syrian forces in the fight against terrorism despite the recent deadly attacks by Israel. For his part, Faisal Miqdad stressed that Syria has fought several wars against Israel and is ready for more confrontations. However, he stressed that it's Damascus who decides how and where these wars will be fought. The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has targeted several Israeli settlements inside the occupied territories. The Israeli regime has also hit multiple towns near the border in South Lebanon. Our correspondent Maryam Saleh joined us today from Beirut to give us the details.
We can see the Israelis going beyond the scope of the ordinary battlefield, if we may say, although it is not a direct battlefield. It is, of course, rocket firing from Hezbollah, the Israelis shelling Lebanese towns. And from here, of course, we can observe and see and sometimes hear the sounds. And despite the fact that the sun is out, it's still very foggy. We're not able to show you directly the smoke that is coming out from some of the posts here. We have the Ruwaisat al-Alam, which was subject to one of the operations from Hezbollah earlier today. We also heard the sounds of explosions several minutes ago. It seemed to be near the Mtulli settlement, and that settlement was subject to several Hezbollah operations in the last 2 days. And in addition to the continuous operations in the Lebanese-occupied Shabaa Farms and Kfar Shuba Hills, the Hezbollah seems to be focusing more their operations on that area, but it also seems to adhere to the battlefield. We can see that, for example, once the Israelis launch very massive shelling on the Lebanese towns, then therefore Hezbollah goes beyond that scope of the border region, the border military post. They go further off within Kiryat Shmona, within the other posts, and also the Golan Heights that we saw, which is a very significant development in the last week or so. Of course, the Israelis today, since the early morning, there was a lot of shelling near the towns of Blat, Naqoura, as well as Salhani, as in addition to some other sounds of shelling that were in Kfar Shuba, which is also on this side, just right under the Shabaa Farms. Of course, that situation could develop.
The Iranian embassy in Kabul celebrates the 45th anniversary of Iran's Islamic Revolution. Officials from the neighboring countries express hope for the expansion of ties between the two nations. Here's more.
The 45th anniversary of Iran's Islamic Revolution is commemorated in the Iranian embassy in Kabul. The event was attended by officials from Afghanistan's Taliban administration and foreign diplomats from several countries. During the ceremony, Afghanistan's deputy foreign minister congratulated the anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution to Iran's special representative and emphasized his country's willingness to broaden ties with Iran.
We must emphasize that the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan wants to broaden ties with neighboring countries, especially the Islamic Republic of Iran. We are committed to deepen our relations with Iran in political, cultural, security, and economic fields. Once again, we congratulate this anniversary and wish to see mutual relations expanding between the two nations.
One of the aspects of the effectiveness of Islamic Revolution in Iran lies within our foreign policy. In this regard, our government have made numerous efforts to expand relations with other countries. Accordingly, one of our main concerns has always been to establish peace in Afghanistan. Islamic Republic of Iran, following the emphasis of its leader, has on its agenda to help the people of Afghanistan and strengthen good neighborliness, dialogue, and communication with the Afghanistan's authorities.
People in many countries were inspired by the Islamic Revolution in Iran. And of course, the Afghans were affected the most in 1979. The Islamic Revolution in Iran was a series of events that led to the overthrow of the Pahlavi dynasty in 1979. The revolution largely affected many Muslim nations around the globe as it marked a significant shift in the political dynamics of the West Asia. It is believed that Iran's Islamic Revolution in 1979 marked a pivotal moment in its history with far-reaching impacts. The revolution played a key role in shaping the geopolitical landscape of West Asia and continues to do so. Abdullah Mirzadeh, Kabul.
The demolition of a Muslim mosque in the Indian state of Uttarakhand has inflamed public sentiments across the country. Critics have criticized the demolition as an appalling and unlawful act. Our correspondent Munawar Zaman reports.
It's a day off for Zayed, a computer science student in New Delhi, hailing from neighboring Uttar Pradesh state. He wants to pursue a career in New Delhi, saying finding job is like a battle in this part of the world. But he is disappointed with the fact that elections are due and nothing more is important for politicians rather than stoking religious sentiments.
The governments have their own agendas to stay in power and they want to win over and over again. So the easy tool is to exploit people on the issue of faith. India's people from all faiths and politicians want us to stay uneducated. So we won't question them on their policies. We should be talking about education, unemployment, healthcare, and good future for our next generation.
After the opening of a major Hindu temple in the town of Ayodhya last month, anti-Muslim sentiments are running high in India. In the Himalayan state of Uttarakhand, the demolition of a decades-old mosque and its seminary has led to deadly clashes. The violence is the latest incident of communal flare-up ahead of general elections. Muslim sites have become a new target of the right-wing Hindu groups. In recent weeks, top Muslim leaders urged the government of Prime Minister Narendra Modi to end the religious dispute, citing a threat to communal harmony and calling for the protection of Muslim places of worship.
Since the BJP rule started in 2014, they are doing everything to destroy the country's secular credential. They are taking the country in the wrong direction by promoting Hindu first agenda to patronize the majority. But this country has a constitution which we trust and believe in. They raised a mosque in New Delhi last week, now in Haldwani, calling them illegal encroachment despite the fact they are decades old. They are selectively targeting a particular community, which is very unfortunate.
Experts say the demolitions are not confined to any particular region or state, but a deliberate attempt to demonize the Muslim community. Meanwhile, tensions have gripped the neighboring state of Uttar Pradesh, Bareilly city, after the arrest of an Islamic cleric who had called for protests against the demolition of the mosque. Human rights groups have called on the Indian government to halt this bulldozer campaign. Critics accuse the Modi's government of failing to address growing incidents of violence and hate campaigns against the Muslim community. They allege the ruling party is stigmatizing its critics and adopting policies that legitimize violence against the religious minorities. The BJP denies the claims, saying equal rights for all is enshrined in Indian democracy.
General elections in India are due in May 2024. Observers say many polarizing issues, including those related to Muslims, are being hyped in both social and political domain to garner public attention in the Hindu majority India, where religion is used for electoral gains. Rights groups have accused the ruling BJP of selectively targeting Muslims, their homes, places of worship and businesses, calling it a larger political agenda. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
And with that, we come to the end of this bulletin. Thank you for being with us. Take care and bye-bye.
Bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Widespread voter anger was in evidence when American, Arab and Muslim leaders expanded a campaign launched recently against President Joe Biden over his handling of the conflict in Gaza. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Stay with us. Russia Today, RT Network, has covered this story and tells us more. Muslim American voters balked at the latest outreach effort by Joe Biden's administration, making it clear that the U.S. president's support for the Israeli war effort in Gaza may imperil his re-election bid. At stake are several so-called swing states with large Muslim populations that helped propel Joe Biden to an electoral victory in the 2020 presidential election. Even small shifts in support from Arab Americans in such hotly contested states as Pennsylvania, Georgia, and Arizona could swing the 2024 election against the Democrat incumbent, who already faces an abandoned Biden movement in Michigan. Widespread voter anger was in evidence recently when Joe Biden's motorcade reportedly had to be rerouted during a campaign stop in Michigan because Arab Americans held a demonstration to voice their anger over the heavy civilian casualties in Gaza. While waving Palestinian flags, the protesters chanted, "Genocide Joe has got to go." Back in Washington, many of the Palestinian Americans invited to a meeting to discuss the Israel-Hamas war with Secretary of State Antony Blinken declined to attend. Explaining their decision to snub Secretary of State Antony Blinken, some of the invited guests said in a statement, "We do not know what more Secretary Blinken or President Biden need to hear or see to compel them to end their complicity in this genocide." Pro-Palestinian protesters have also camped outside Antony Blinken's home in recent days to press for a change in policy. Dr. Tariq Haddad, a Virginia cardiologist who declined to attend recent meeting at the U.S. State Department, told Antony Blinken in a letter that he could not face him after the administration's policies led to the deaths of 80 of his family members in Gaza. Dr. Tariq Haddad wrote, "The more I thought about this meeting, the more I could not emotionally bring myself to look you in the eyes, Secretary Blinken, knowing you and President Biden have knowingly contributed to the suffering and murder of so many members of my family, the homelessness and dispossession of 2 million Palestinians of Gaza, and the famine that has befallen my remaining family members." According to local health authorities, tens of thousands of innocent Gazans have been massacred since the war began on 7th of October, and the United Nations has reported that nearly 600,000 people in the besieged Gaza Strip are starving. The Biden administration has approved 2 emergency arms sales to Israel, bypassing congressional authority, and has rejected calls for a ceasefire in Gaza. At the same time, President Biden and Secretary of State Antony Blinken claim that they have urged Israeli leaders to minimize civilian casualties in Gaza and allow more humanitarian aid trucks to enter Gaza. A Quinnipiac University opinion poll released recently showed that only 34% of U.S. voters approve of Joe Biden's handling of the crisis in Gaza. An earlier opinion poll by CBS News found that President Biden's support for Israel was alienating at least one-third of Democratic voters in America. National broadcaster CBS News has also covered this story and tells us more. Arab leaders in Michigan elected to forego a scheduled meeting with President Joe Biden's campaign manager, Julie Chavez Rodriguez, in Dearborn, Michigan, recently. This decision comes amidst heightened tensions stemming from the Israeli war in Gaza, which has elicited widespread anger among voters in Michigan. A group of stakeholders within the community, including Wayne County Executive Assad Turf, cancelled the meeting, citing dissatisfaction with President Joe Biden's handling of the Israeli war in the Gaza Strip. Other prominent figures, including Dearborn's mayor, Abdullah Hamoud, also declined the invitation, asserting that the timing was inappropriate for electoral discussions. The mayor of Dearborn, Michigan, Abdullah Hamoud, expressed, "For us, you have to have that conversation with policymakers, those who are actually influencing decision-making. That is not campaign staff. It's actually dehumanizing to send campaign staff to ask us what would it take to earn your support in November when you have an active genocide that is being funded and supported and defended by the current administration." Khaled Turani, chairman of the abandoned Biden campaign in Michigan, dismissed any attempts by the Biden administration to regain support from Arab American voters, labeling it as futile. Local Palestinian activist Lexis Zaidan echoed similar sentiments, rejecting the invite and emphasizing the newfound political significance of the Arab American and Muslim vote. Lexis Zaidan says, "They now see us as a threat, and they know they can't win in elections without us." State Representative Alabas Farhat, a member of the Democratic Party, emphasized that the issue transcends politics, advocating for a ceasefire as the primary focus of any dialogue. Emphasizing the need for immediate action to address the ongoing crisis, Alabas Farhat asserted, "This isn't a political issue. The solution is simple. It's been laid out for nearly 4 months." CBS News Detroit reached out to the Biden campaign for comment. However, the Biden campaign has not responded. Turkey's Anadolu news agency has also covered this same story. American Arab and Muslim leaders expanded a campaign launched recently against President Joe Biden over his handling of the Israeli war in Gaza. Abandoned Biden campaign was first launched by Muslim leaders from Michigan, Minnesota, Arizona, Wisconsin, Florida, Georgia, Nevada, and Pennsylvania. The recent plan to actively campaign against Joe Biden in all 50 U.S. states was announced in Chicago, Illinois, at the end of a national convention organized by the Muslim American Society and the Islamic Circle of North America. The leaders intend to guarantee Joe Biden's loss in the upcoming 2024 election over his refusal to call for a ceasefire in Gaza, where Israeli attacks have massacred tens of thousands of innocent Palestinians. The campaign organizers say on their website, "President Biden's abandoning of Muslim Americans compels Muslim leaders to abandon Biden." Speaking at a press conference during the announcement of the nationwide plan, Hassan Abdul Salam, the spokesperson for the campaign, stated, "The idea here is that we will actively campaign against and ensure that Joe Biden loses his 2024 election. Hassan Abdul Salam, the spokesperson for the campaign, added, "The president betrayed us because he violated the value of dignity and life. What's the point of voting for you when you deny 2.2 million people in Gaza their water?" Council on American Islamic Relations CARE Minnesota representative Jaylani Hussein, for his part, said, "The organization demands President Biden to be sensitive and consistent regarding Gaza." During his interview with Anadolu News Agency, Edward Ahmed Mitchell, the Council on American Islamic Relations National Deputy Executive Director, said, "There is intense disappointment among Muslim Americans regarding President Biden's policy on Israel and Palestine, especially the ongoing war in Gaza." The civil rights attorney, Edward Ahmed Mitchell, added, "It is very clear to everyone that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is not accidentally killing civilians whilst targeting resistance fighters. He is deliberately targeting Palestinian civilians."
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salamun alaikum, dear listeners. This is IRIB English Radio, The Viewpoints. Here in the studio, I am with Brother Ali and Sheikh Agha Mohammadi, Islamic scholars and researchers. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, brother. Thanks for inviting me to this show.
To begin, we're in Bahman. You know, the Islamic revolution happened in this month. It is one of the greatest moments in the history, as many scholars have described it, talked about it, wrote articles on it. So I would like to ask this question. What is the most important thing that draws attention from all scholars all around the world? What is it that? What is the origin of this revolution in your ideas?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. First of all, I'd like to thank you and say salam to you and respected listeners, and offer my congratulations on the anniversary of Islamic Revolution in these days that happened almost 45 years ago. To talk about the roots and origins of this revolution, lots of thinkers and analysts and researchers have wrote already and talked about this in details. From the scholars of sociology and others have discussed and wrote about it, but to present a gist of it, I want to say this revolution is quite different revolution with other revolutions that happened in the course of history. Due to many reasons, because from the view that those who have created this revolution were not ordinary people that created other revolutions, or the people who actually supported the leaders were, again, came to the scene with another intention, very, very different with the previous ones. In most of the social changes that happened in different revolutions and in different scenes and in different parts of the world, we usually see the factor of economy to be a prevailing factor for this revolution, or, I don't know, social unrest, or different factors that usually make people that suffocated, that they came to this understanding that they need to change the regime or the government or the state. But here we see a crucial difference. What is the difference? The difference is that the roots of this revolution goes back to Islam and Islamic teachings. We see from the leaders who were Islamic leaders and Islamic authorities who were actually leading the nation, and we again in the same line, we see people who are backing the leaders were people with a great sense of religiosity, who had a very who really were concerned for their religious issues and religious concerns, and the mottos and slogans that they have selected in different demonstrations and rallies that they had had at that time. We saw that they were saying that they are looking for an Islamic environment. They were looking for justice. Let's say they were looking for social justice. It's true that they were also had some criticisms and critics on the economical issues of that time as well. But to be honest, we see the color of these religious mottos and slogans were more prevailing and more colorful. So even the scientists in the realm of sociology, like Michel Foucault and others, we have read their confessions that this revolution was quite different with any other revolution in the course of history. Mm-hmm. When they are talking about the roots of this revolution, they say that it was a pure religious revolution in comparison to other revolutions that happened already. While people are coming to the scene from, let's say, mosques, masjids, and religious centers, and who is actually motivating people, gives them enough motive to come to the scene. They are the clerics and Islamic leaders and authorities. These are the things that makes it quite different with other
revolutions. But the people who are involved from the slogans, but the things that they share, the thoughts, the values they have in common. Mm-hmm. So we can understand that the
origins, places that these movement has started from.
So the origins are more religious. The origins are more based on religious values. So let's ask this question from our expert, Sheikh Aka Mohammadi. So, you know, do you think that do you understand that what makes people appreciate these values? What is it that people are so aware that they decide to move on, to have a movement, or to start doing something for this?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salams to you and to your respected guest and dear listeners. Yeah, as my brother said, the roots of the revolution are very strongly rooted in religion and in Islam, when I'm talking about the religion. If we look at the past 200 years, the two centuries of Iranian history, we see that this movement against the kingdom and the sort of royal system started, and usually all these years it was the elites who were in the front line of the struggle, and the grassroots lay people were not that much involved in these movements, especially from the beginning of the last century. We have the famous scholar, the elite, Taqi Arani. He studied in Germany. He studied different fields, especially chemistry and physics, and later on philosophy in Germany he studied. And when he came back, he's one of the pioneers of bringing Marxism into Iran. And Marxism as a solution, you know. When we're talking about Marxism, I'm not talking about Marxism today. I'm talking about Marxism 100 years ago, that it was one of the ideal paths that people considered the way towards the future.
Even Marxism was taking ground in Iran.
So I'm talking about how the elites were struggling against the what they called the oppression of the kings. Mm-hmm. So Taqi Arani is one of the, you can say he is known as the think tank and as the first person who brought the founders of Hizb-e-Tudeh, mm-hmm. to the party.
Okay.
And so what happens is that it is just the literature they created and the people that they attracted. They were from the universities, some university students, some elites. But always they had this problem that they couldn't communicate with the people. Mm-hmm. So that's why even as a kind of reaction to this, they happened a lot even to mock people, to disrespect their faith. And after a while, Marxism was equal to kind of atheism in Iran, the way it was understood that the Marxists had this approach of anti-religious approach that sometimes even they disrespected.
The, also, we have communism.
The Hezbollah also, they are, I mean, they have the communism, mm-hmm. but I mean the way that he was influenced. Of course, he didn't consider himself as a what do you call it, from Tudor and from the communists, but he had the Marxist ideology. So later on, it was there was a kind of synthesis with different groups and different political movements. Then they be, I mean, all this lying, all this, you know, if you look at their struggle, it's lying, it's some decades, even mm-hmm. from the very time that Mohammad Reza Pahlavi came, these people were there. If you look at his prisons, it was always full with this, you know, be this kind of people.
Yeah.
But the point is that they, none of them were capable to recruit people. But mm-hmm. when Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, he raised and he was known as the leader, it's the time that Imam Khomeini could address the nation and mm-hmm. Imam Khomeini could recruit the nation with him. Mm-hmm. So this is the difference, that those people later on, even they themselves, they accepted to come and to define themselves or redefine themselves with a kind of Islamic brand. Mm-hmm. And especially after the struggles that Dr. Shariati had. So these people, so they rebranded themselves and so they tried to sort of magnify their Islamic, what do you call it, approach, like you see that what Gol Sorkhi, for example, talks about mm-hmm. Imam Hussein, mm-hmm. and later on Dr. Shariati talking about Imam Hussein and Imam Ali alayhi salam, because then they feel that people are religious. Mm-hmm. And all these years, their faith was ignored. And so even, I mean, those people, they tried to come and redefine themselves under this umbrella, but not, they were not capable to recruit people. So the great thing that is that people trusted Imam Khomeini
yeah.
as a religious leader.
Okay.
And he could talk people the way that they could understand, and they could accompany him in all the journey towards the victory.
Okay, so here is a point. You know, with, I would like to ask this question from Brother Ali. You know, this recruitment, you know, all the movements here in the revolution started to recruit. We have different branches, different groups of people. So how is it possible to have these kinds of groups and then move them toward one cause? I mean, is this, I'm talking about this, the leadership here, the role of the leaders, so the necessity of it. Can you please explain a little about it?
Yeah, when you see a convergence in different factors that lead to a revolution, that is the leader, the slogans and mottos, the supporters, and other senses that makes a revolution, that make a revolution, we see a sort of common language between them, and that common language is Islam, that mm-hmm. is, or Islamic beliefs, or religion in general. Okay. So they have gathered through this axis, and they found their common language in this line. So we see a leader who invites people to the nature, to the fitrah, of the pure fitrah of the humanity. And this is, again, the same thing that the people think that this is the last thing that they have had in their lives. Again, their mottos are around the same circle and axis, and we see sort of conformity in this regard. So all in all, we see at the end of the day, what is the output and the outcome of such a mixture? We see that everything is completing, every part is completing the other part, and they become only one. A wahda is usually formed here. A wahda is formed here. So we see that all different factors come to perfect and make each other completed. And this is the reason that we see that they found this this sense of convergence, this sense of unity in between themselves, and all of them were trying and were competing to reach to the target or the goal, which was the collapse of the current regime, and saying salam and saying welcome to the new motto, to the new format of government, which has been taken, or let's say adopted, from Islamic teachings and from the concept of city-state of the Holy Prophet that was made in Medina.
Thank you. This is all the time we have. This was a very challenging discussion, so we can talk hours and hours about it. Thank you for our experts. That's all the time we have. May the mighty bless you all.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
A recent opinion poll found that the Palestinian issue has resumed its place as a top priority for the Arab public as a whole. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. responsible Statecraft magazine has covered this story and tells us more. According to a representative poll of 16 Arab countries released on Thursday, 8th of February, by the Arab Center, Washington, D.C., Israel's war in the Gaza Strip and Washington's support of that war is inflicting serious damage on U.S. standing across the Arab world. An aggregate average of 82% of respondents across the region described the United States' response to the war as very bad, while another 12% described it as bad. And an aggregate of 72% of respondents said that the U.S. policy towards the war in Gaza will harm Washington's image in the region, either somewhat, 22%, or very much, 50%. Similar percentages said it will harm U.S. interests in the region as well. An aggregate of 76% said their views on U.S. policy in the Arab world had become more negative since the war in Gaza began. An aggregate average of more than half of respondents, or 51%, also said they regard the United States as constituting the biggest threat to peace and stability in the region, up from 39% who named the U.S. as the greatest threat in the Arab Center poll in 2022. One in three correspondents, or 33%, described the Israeli regime as the region's greatest threat. The opinion poll, which queried 8,000 respondents across 16 countries that together account for 95% of the Arab region's total population, was conducted by telephone interviews between 12th of December and 5th of January. That is, during the third month of Israel's campaigning in Gaza. The countries included Saudi Arabia, Oman, Kuwait, Yemen, Qatar in the Persian Gulf, Lebanon, Jordan, Iraq, and the Palestinian West Bank across the Levant and Mesopotamia, and Mauritania, Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, Libya, Egypt, and Sudan in North Africa. Bahrain, the United Arab Emirates, and Syria were not included in the survey. The aggregate regional opinions were calculated as an average of the results of the 16 surveyed countries, with each country given the same weight in order to ensure that the opinions of respondents in the most populous countries did not dominate the survey's findings. According to Shibli Talhami, a professor at the University of Maryland, the results of the poll, which was carried out in cooperation with the Arab Center for Research and Policy Studies in Doha, Qatar, should cause some alarm in Washington. Shibli Talhami said at an event presenting the survey findings at the National Press Club on Thursday, 8th of February, said, "This is a historic moment in some very important ways, the scale of what we have seen and the role the United States has played in this deeply painful crisis has been so large and been perceived to be so large that it's going to leave an imprint on the consciousness of a generation in the region that is going to outlast this administration and outlast this crisis." Respondents believe Washington to be a key component enabling the Zionist regime to carry out its war in Gaza, in which tens of thousands of Palestinians, mostly women and children, have reportedly been massacred to date. Exactly half of the Arab public named U.S. military and political support as the most important factor, with an additional 15% saying it was the second most important factor. The lack of decisive action from Arab governments towards the Israeli regime, which was the second popular choice, was named by 14% of respondents as the most important factor, and by 23% of respondents as the second most important factor. The poll also showed a notable increase in opposition in the Arab world for recognizing Israel in certain countries. An aggregate of 89% of respondents said they opposed recognition of Israel, while only 4% favored it, the lowest percentage since the question was first posed back in 2011. Of particular note in the response were responses from respondents in Saudi Arabia. Normalizing relations between Saudi Arabia and Israel has been a key goal of the Biden administration, which has been engaged in intensive negotiations with both Riyadh and Tel Aviv over the terms of normalization, including Saudi demands for a ceasefire in Gaza. The opinion poll found that the percentage of Saudi respondents who oppose the recognition of Israel has jumped from 38% last time the question was asked in 2022 to 68% now, an increase apparently largely attributable to the war in Gaza. The website of Islam Times has also covered this story and tells us more. In a blow to Joe Biden's policy, which has repeatedly claimed his commitment to the creation of a Palestinian state alongside Israel since the Gaza war began, large majorities of respondents in each country said they did not consider Washington to be serious about following through. An aggregate average of 68% of respondents said Washington was not at all serious about its commitment, while another 13% said Washington was somewhat unserious. Skepticism was particularly high in Jordan, Lebanon, and the Palestinian West Bank, which together housed the greatest number of Palestinian refugees in the Arab world. But 77% of the public in Saudi Arabia said Washington was either not at all serious, 62%, or somewhat unserious, 11%. A recent opinion poll found that the Palestinian issue has resumed its place as a top priority for Arab public as a whole. Asked whether they considered the Palestinian cause as one for all Arabs and not just the Palestinian people alone, an aggregate average of 92% of respondents chose the first option, 16 percentage points higher than when the same question was asked back in 2022. In Saudi Arabia, the percentage agreeing with that view jumped from 69% to 95%. Similar large increases were found in countries such as Iraq, Egypt, and Morocco. As for views about the positions of key Arab countries towards the war in Gaza, respondents were most critical of the United Arab Emirates, with an aggregate average of 67% rating Abu Dhabi's position as either very bad or bad. Saudi Arabia did not fare much better, with an aggregate of 64% of respondents describing its position as very bad, that is 44% very bad and 20% bad. Majorities also disapproved of the positions of Egypt and the Palestinian Authority. The war has also reduced the hope that there can be peace between Israel and Palestine. An aggregate of nearly 60% of respondents said that during the war they had become certain that there will be no possibility of peace with the Israeli regime, while only 13% still believe in the possibility of peace. Shibli Telhami, a professor at the University of Maryland, said, "Ultimately, the test of whether the public's reaction to the war will be how governments in the Arab world respond." He said, "The first evidence will be whether or not Saudi Arabia insists on the creation of an independent Palestinian state as part of any normalization agreement with Israel."
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.